lots of opining in the aftermath of Congressman Eric Cantor's loss to Tea Party conservative Dave Brat in the state of Virginia. I'm sure you've heard of that upset by now, and a number of Michigan Tea Party affiliated candidates are weighing in on this thing. I'm looking at Marissa Schultz and Chad Livengood's story in this morning's Detroit News. Tom McMillan weighs in on this, and State Rep McMillan is a candidate for U.S. Congress for the Republicans here in the 8th District. McMillan says the main thing it showed is money's not everything. I think it makes clear that if you get your message across, and if your message is solid constitutional conservatism and free markets and personal liberty, limited government, I think those are the things that people are looking for. East Lansing political advisor Steve Mitchell said yesterday that Cantor did not take his opponent seriously enough, early enough. Some fallout there to Eric Cantor's loss in Virginia. It's current state here on 90.5 WKAR. We're glad you're along here on Thursday. We learn about a very interesting development in the state of Michigan, the growth of companies brewing mead. Mead is an alcoholic beverage, kind of like beer, kind of like wine, from what I understand. That is really taking off in our state. And we're going to talk with one of the most successful mead brewers in the state of Michigan coming up later on in the program. It was the latest night at the state capitol in quite a while last night, with members of the state Senate struggling over road funding until about 1 this morning. Michigan Public Radio Network Bureau Chief Rick Pluta was watching the proceedings, and he joins us from his office in downtown Lansing for a recap. Hi, Rick.
Good morning, Mark.
Let's work backwards.
We could have used some mead last night.
I think you needed espresso more than mead, my friend.
Good point.
You need it this morning. Let's work backward from where this morning's session ended. What were legislators voting on by the end of the session?
Well, by the end of the session, they were voting on what it would essentially be an almost revenue-neutral structure for changing how we handle fuel taxes in Michigan to raise money for roads. And that was after repeated attempts to actually vote on something that would substantially increase fuel taxes, or maybe put the question to voters on the ballot in the form of a sales tax increase. You know, multiple times. It was a 15-hour session which, like you said, it's been a while since we've had one of those to try and get a fuel funding package through, going into this morning on what is expected to be the last day before the legislature takes its summer break.
I'm really curious about this proposal to put this in front of the voters. How much support did that idea have generally?
Not enough. What some people were doing was sort of looking at this intractable political problem and kind of hearkened back to the mid-90s and Proposal A and said, well, maybe if we can't get support for any specific one proposal, we could, you know, one plan, we could come up with one and then develop that would basically, you know, deal with the fuel tax and you know, raising the fuel tax and whatnot, but then also put an alternative on the ballot for the sales tax so that you would guarantee a revenue stream one way or the other, but you'd let the voters decide which one they wanted. And a majority of lawmakers, Republicans and Democrats, said for them that's not good enough. Although in the case, that was actually an idea that was a little bit more popular among Republicans than Democrats. And then when it came time for the for the straight up fuel tax increase, Democrats put up their share of the votes, but Republicans couldn't get theirs.
How many separate votes did the entire Senate make yesterday?
Oh my goodness.
Did you keep track?
Lost count.
Okay.
You know, between the procedural votes, the process votes, but I mean easily more than a dozen on just the fuel tax alone.
I think it was pretty clear that the Democrats, some number of Democrats, needed to be on board in order for the billion-dollar proposal
yes.
to move forward. What did the Democrats want in exchange for their support?
Well, what they got, which was in exchange for increasing the homestead property tax credit, which would help lower income people, families, I think, with an income of below $70,000 with the costs of owning a home or renting. And they said, in exchange for that, we will put up half of our caucus, half of the Democrats in the Senate will vote for this. But then to get to the numbers that you need Republican majority, you need to come up with half of your caucus. And that's where things fell short,
okay.
which was on the Republican side.
What were what were amongst the bargaining chips that the Republicans were offering?
You know what? It was, you know, the Democrats have put a lot of things on the table, and what Republicans finally bargained on was the homestead property tax credit. And then after that, it kind of became either, you know, their responsibility to bargain amongst themselves, because they are in the majority, to come up with the votes for a transportation package, or they had to go and offer something more to the Democrats to get more votes. And that's, like I said, that's where things just fell short, that there wasn't anything, you know, there wasn't anything new for that they were willing to offer the Democrats, and they couldn't get sufficient votes from their own ranks.
Well, were these party line votes, or was it more complicated?
No, these were not party line votes. Again, there was an arrangement, an understanding of how many votes the Republicans would put up and how many votes the Democrats would put up.
Gotcha.
They said half of each caucus, which is, you know, the partisan group, and there are 12 Democrats, so they put up six votes. In a couple cases, they put up one or two more, and in the case of the Republicans, they have 26. So they had to put up 13, and they could only get 8 or 9.
Hmm. We're talking with Michigan.
Depending on the vote.
We are talking with Michigan Public Radio Network Bureau Chief Rick Pluta from downtown Lansing in the aftermath of last night's extended Senate session over road funding measures. The Democratic leader, Gretchen Whitmer of East Lansing, described the failure to pass a more comprehensive road funding measure an embarrassment. And according to the Free Press, blamed the governor and Randy Richardville. Is this a serious setback for majority Republicans?
Well, if the goal is to get a road funding package done, and you know, other than getting the budget wrapped up, that was Governor Snyder's top priority. Yes, you know, I mean, what else? You know, what else could it be? And now we will see what happens today when the House and the Senate come back in a little less than an hour to start their sessions. But it's very likely that this session may actually be not extended, but they keep some work days on the calendar to deal with anything that might crop up over the summer. Usually what happens is they gavel in, no one shows up, they gavel out. Those could actually be work days.
Interesting. Could the session be, are we apt to hear the governor say, take a vote, not a vacation again?
No, no,
that
absolutely not. As a matter of fact, we have asked him about that, and he has said that in not so many words, tried that, didn't work, won't try it again.
How is the reception back in home districts likely to be? Is that going to be predicated on the politics in those local districts? Are conservative Republican districts apt to actually commend Republicans, conservative Republicans, for not getting behind this thing, and vice versa?
Well, we'll see. It'll you know, change from district to district and region to region of the state, depending on what they want. But you know, what we've seen is sort of a couple different things, you know, from what we know about the public opinion research, which is that people very much want something done about the roads, that just too many people are you know, hitting potholes, seeing potholes, and saying that this is unacceptable. It's got to be fixed. They're less convinced that new taxes are the way to do it, that they think that there may be some fat and chaff in the budget that can be used to be put toward that. So you may even see a little bit of both that, you know, especially in Republican districts, that people are mad that nothing is being done about the roads, but they're not unhappy that a tax increase is still not part of it.
Senator Richard Ville did point out that there was incremental progress made toward funding Michigan roads. Can you remind us what?
Well, that's certainly putting the best face on it, that there is a package that has already been approved in the state house that really just takes what's been sort of the state's practice recently of you know, basically using money from the main bank account, the general fund, to make sure that pretty much most of the money that's collected at the pump in fuel taxes and sales taxes is actually used to fix roads. But that's kind of an accounting measure. And then also, you know, what we're going to, you know, see activity about today is maybe something to put the structure of switching Michigan from a percentage from doing just a straight up, you know,
cents
number
per
of
gallon
cents per
to
gallon
a percentage
to
yeah.
a percentage, so at least that would account for inflation.
That will be very interesting if that gains some traction, don't you think?
It will be, but it will be, you know, in the context of this just a modest change, what it will have set up is how we're going to do it without really doing it, that the amount of new revenue it would raise would be something a little south of $40 million. And, you know, what we're talking about to do the work that the experts say is needed is, you know, easily more than $1.2 billion.
Education funding was addressed yesterday, and a measure sits on Governor Snyder's desk. Briefly, Rick, tell us about what's in it.
Well, it is a modest increase in school funding and the foundation allowance, but in fact so modest that a lot of school districts say it doesn't even really cover their increase in costs, inflationary costs, the rising costs of healthcare and energy. And in some cases, especially in urban school districts like Lansing, they're complaining that other schools, cyber schools, charter schools, are actually getting a bigger bump somewhat at their expense. Remember, part of the reason for this is, you know, at the beginning of the year, it looked like revenue was just going gangbusters. We were talking, you know, surplus, and now the picture is a little less rosy, and we'll balance the budget, but there's not as much money to play with.
Rick Pluta is the bureau chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network. He's been joining us from downtown Lansing. Thank you, Rick.
Oh, my pleasure, Mark.
Well, as you just heard, the Michigan Senate will have just a few hours to try to cobble together a plan to raise significant revenue to fix the state's roads. Current state's Kevin Lavery has been thinking about the physical process of road repair, and he joins me now in the studio. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Mark. State lawmakers will attempt a final Hail Mary pass today on the road funding package. If they can't get it done, then they will have to wait until September, and by then the summer construction season will have been over. In the midst of all this, though, many of us are still left with the question, what is being done to make stronger stuff for our roads that lasts longer? This is not an easy answer, but it is an ongoing engineering pursuit. On a hot day southwest of Lansing, the air is rife with the pungent smell of hot liquid asphalt. Lansing Asphalt is a subsidiary of Superior Asphalt, based in Grand Rapids. At full capacity, this plant can make up to 400 tons of asphalt each hour. Consultant Ron Bentley spent nearly two decades as a plant operator in Grand Rapids. He's dwarfed beside the two giant tanks that dominate the grounds.
Those two upright tanks there hold 40,000 gallons of liquid asphalt. That's kept at 315 degree temperature. That's the hot, gooey black stuff.
Liquid asphalt is a viscous form of petroleum. It's blended with a variety of crushed rocks and stones called aggregates. There are different grades or mixes of asphalt, depending on their usage. Obviously, what you'd pave your driveway with doesn't have to be as strong as what you'd pour on an interstate. Bentley says there's a science to acquiring the right materials that will hold up to pressure and temperature.
We have to meet certain specs, and so we have to have producers that meet them specs, or we never will. So yeah, quality control is something that, since I started in 1988, has almost tripled in cost and size and in what we do to assure that we're making roads and a product that's going to last a long time.
Lansing Asphalt has a small laboratory where asphalt mixes are tested to meet those specifications. The key, says lab manager Matt McClendon, is air. You've got to make sure that asphalt can breathe.
The less air you have in between all the stones and in the overall mix, the more liquid you have, the stiffer it's going to be.
And the more susceptible it is to cracking. This lab is not designed for cooking up experimental new blends, though that does happen at other facilities. Kevin Kennedy is an HMA engineer, that's hot mix asphalt, with the Michigan Department of Transportation.
We're always looking into better ways to improve our hot mix asphalt, and we definitely participate in different research projects with other states and on a national level. Depending on the roadway and the amount of traffic in the area of the state, we have different requirements, so we feel the requirements we have in place definitely give us a good product when we build our roads.
Lansing Asphalt's behind-the-scenes tour was meant to give business leaders and public officials a better understanding of the physical product Michiganders are paying for. Mary Clark is the clerk of Delta Township, where the plant is located. She came to learn more about a company about which she might one day cast a policy vote. But she also came for the knowledge that will help her lobby her own state officials. Having once worked in the legislature, Clark says she's seen how decisions are sometimes crafted.
Rationale doesn't always come into play. Unfortunately, it's more political than rational in a lot of the decision making, and that's sad for the residents of Michigan. But yes, indeed. When I see Senator Jones, I absolutely will ask him, have you been out here? Do you understand how it works and why we need action?
Senator Rick Jones, a Republican from Grand Ledge, concedes he's never toured an asphalt plant. But he says his interest is in making sure road contractors remain on the hook for their work.
And all you have to do is drive up 69 up there by DeWitt and look at what that road builder did. We need to have good roads built soundly. And that's why I favor making sure that everybody that builds roads is bonded, insured, so if their work fails, it'll be replaced.
Those who build and maintain Michigan roads say there are ways to develop strong asphalt blends, as well as recycling used asphalt. This week, the Michigan House passed a bill that allows for materials such as coal ash and scrap wood to be used as road construction fill. But of course, so much of this issue comes down to money. MDOT asphalt engineer Kevin Kennedy says the state must stretch its dollars to patch the scarred and preserve the smooth.
We need to do a mix of fixes where we need to do some newer construction, but we also need to do preventive maintenance, you know, keeping our good roads good. But, you know, right now the struggle is you have to have the dollars necessary to manage that system.
And for Michigan taxpayers, that's where the rubber meets the road. For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
It's Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mark Bayshore. Dr. Kirk Heinze is host of the regular feature Greening of the Great Lakes on WKAR's MSU Today program. Some of those conversations make their way to Current State. And in a recent Greening of the Great Lakes segment, Heinze spoke with Terry Terry, co-founder and president of the Michigan Institute for Contemporary Art, and organizer of the new Grand American Fish Rodeo. The Lansing event takes place beginning today through Saturday at Adado Riverfront Park. The Grand American Fish Rodeo blends music, storytelling, food, and drink with boating, fishing, and other outdoor activities. The three-day celebration highlights the best of Michigan outdoor culture and nature on the banks of the Grand River in downtown Lansing. Terry began the conversation with the origins of the Fish Rodeo.
Well, I was talking with, I was asked by the former, now retired, executive director of the Greater Lansing Convention and Visitors Bureau about, you know, what can we do, did I have any ideas, what can we do to put, you know, Lansing and Michigan really on the map in a national way? And we did a lot of brainstorming, and I told them an idea I had in the early days of what we were doing in Old Town, which was we did our first events before Jazz and Blues Fest. It was a snake rodeo, where we had all the artists have an image of a snake in their submissions, and we had, you know, music on the street. And since we're on the Grand River, and we have a fish ladder, I had this idea of doing a fish rodeo, and of course everybody laughed at me. And now 20 years later or so, anyways, I described the idea to Lee, and he said, hey, why don't we see if the CVB would support that? And they have. They've helped underwrite the start of this. We have a three-year plan to build it. And this will be our first year testing the waters, getting our feet wet, and how to do a crazy event on the Great Grand River in downtown Lansing.
Well, Terry, what's really compelling for me, this blending of the arts, of folk culture, natural resources, environmental stewardship, it kind of brings a lot of things together that maybe people don't commonly associate.
That's true. And, you know, our goal is to have a unique experience for people that are into boating and fishing, and country music and other things, and to come together along our great river. I mean, one of the unused and untapped resources in Lansing in particular is the river, and we think this can help, you know, bring about some education and participation and development and proper stewardship of the river and so forth.
Well, again, it's the inaugural Grand American Fish Rodeo coming right up in Lansing, June 12th through 14th. Terry, let's talk about some of the things. What would you like to highlight? I mean, there's so many things going on, but I noticed, like, for example, there's a writing contest, which appeals to the old English major in me.
Right. We're giving, you know, everything is themed around fishing and boating, and we're giving, there's a writing contest. Everything's on the website. It's thegrandamericanfishrodeo.com, and you can sign up now. We encourage people to continue doing that for these competitions. But one of them is a writing contest. And I'll be honest, I don't remember what that prize amount is right now, but everything's got a prize. We're approaching $10,000 in prizes for all the event competitions that we're doing. We also have a fishing tournament. The U.S. Fisheries and Wildlife is helping organize that. A rubber fish derby, a boat parade, canoe and kayak races, a fashion show where people have to submit clothing or, you know, fashion clothing that have like 20% fishing net in it, a bucking bass, a watering hole, the beverage tent. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, the fishing metaphors are abound here. We're going to be talking next with Tammy Pattison, whom you know from the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. But when you went to these different agencies with this idea, probably new for them as well, but what was the reaction when you talked to the DNR, the DEQ, the Fish and Wildlife people?
Well, two things. First, everybody laughed at me. Everybody laughed, which is good. They go, you know, fish rodeo, what's that? And we said, well, look, Texas has, you know, are known for cowboys and rodeos. Michigan, we have these great, you know, we have rivers, lakes, streams, fish. And yet San Antonio, Texas has a, you know, a great, you know, area where they've got, you know, a $1 billion industry along this really little canals, and we've got a great river. So they liked it. In fact, they had influence on the name because we first started out calling it the Great Lakes and then the Great American, and they said, you should call it the Grand American Fish Rodeo. It has a better ring to it, and you're on the Grand River. So now we're also saying to everybody, have a grand day instead of have a good day or whatever. Have a grand day when we leave. They've been really supportive. It's phenomenal, the resources that people are bringing to the table to make this happen.
My guest is Terry. He's the co-founder and president of the Michigan Institute for Contemporary Art. And the Michigan Institute for Contemporary Art is putting on the Grand American Fish Rodeo in Lansing, June 12 through 14. Terry, you mentioned San Antonio and that wonderful river walk. And, you know, as soon as you mentioned that, I caught, you know, I could envision the analogy or the comparison between this event and what goes on along that river walk with the arts and the music, et cetera. So that may have helped inspire this idea.
Could have. I've been there several times. So, yeah. And, yeah, we're excited. You know, it's our inaugural event. We want to be a little quirky, a little whimsical. You know, we've got the prize dimension. We got the great, you know, we want a lot of people on the river. We have boats and boat rides, people to really experience the river. And we've got great musical entertainment at night.
Well, we're certainly encouraging all of our listeners to get down there. But, Terry, are there any fees or charges? Is it free? How does it work?
I'll say mostly free. The beverage tent has a $5 entry, and then the bands in the evening are $10 to hear the evening performances. But everything else is free, the education, so forth. There may be some of the boating people may charge a few dollars for some of the boat rides, but everything's pretty heavily, you know, discounted in that regard. We'll have good food there, lots to drink. Westside Beer is a sponsor. Trips Automotive is our presenting sponsor for the whole event. We've got great community support, and our goal is, you know, another time we'll talk about our ideas for next year, but we have some really crazy ones that we think will really get us major national attention, but that will come next.
Well, as much fun as this event is going to be over the 3 days, and you've alluded to this several times, I mean, this is a major educational event for families and young people, not only about our great heritage, as you mentioned, but also about sustainability and environment and how to do things the right way going forward. One thing I noticed, too, and I had to ask you this, the Red Cross is going to have a disaster relief ambulance on display. That's sort of an interesting exhibit.
Yeah, well, the Red Cross, you know, does a lot for our community, so much, and I'm really thankful they're going to be there to show people what they do and educate, you know, people about what the Red Cross does, and so we'll have that available to us as well. I'm excited. I mean, there's so much going on with this. I don't even know everything. You know, people are bringing a lot to the table, and I think, you know, I want so many people to come to this and really experience it and then help us figure out really how to grow it and make it a premier event.
Well, again, with all these wonderful sponsors, I mean, there are too many to mention, but and all the program partners, I mean, it's impressive for first time out of the gate. Again, it's the 2014 Grand American Fish Rodeo, June 12th through 14th at Edado Riverfront Park in Lansing. Terry, we got about 30 seconds here, but give our listeners a shout-out, a pitch for why they need to come.
If you want to experience a unique event, if you like boating, if you like fishing, if you like country music, if you like to eat, if you like to drink, we've got it all, and we've got a unique mix of people and experiences that nothing like it. Nothing like it. It'll be your most unique summer experience.
Current state on 90.5 WKAR. We've all heard of 6 degrees of separation, the idea that everyone in the world is connected through chains of acquaintance. Our next guest, Bugsy Saylor, believes that with social media, the degrees separating people are even smaller, closer to 5 or 4 degrees of separation. Bugsy decided to put his theory to the test. In 2010, as a New Year's resolution, he launched Beer with Branson, an online social experiment to see if his connections could land him a beer with one of his idols, Virgin Group founder and billionaire Richard Branson. His experiment was a success. A few weeks ago, Bugsy, a Michigan State alum and the founder of Uperstees, sat down to have a beer with Sir Richard Charles Nicholas Branson. Current state's Emmanuel Berry talked with him about reaching his goal.
So how did the project Beer with Branson come to be?
I started Beer with Branson in late 2009. I was just kind of thinking to myself, if I could have a beer with anybody, who would it be? And Richard Branson came to mind. And then it was a little while later, I was thinking of a New Year's resolution, and I was thinking, might as well make it a year-long goal to have a beer with Richard Branson.
And why Richard Branson? Why does he come to mind for you?
Well, I've always admired his entrepreneurial skills and history. He's done so much from Virgin Records and Virgin Airlines, Virgin Mobile, and he's always kind of gone after kind of bigger existing conglomerates and given them a new twist with his brand. And then he's always had this adventurous side, you know, trying to circumnavigate the world in a hot air balloon and trying to do a world record across the Atlantic Ocean in a boat. Just this attitude and kind of brand and, you know, his personality of can do anything. And, you know, if you have a crazy idea, you know, just going for it.
Do you feel like you share that can do anything kind of attitude with him?
I would hope so. It's done pretty well for him. So I think it's done pretty well for myself so far as well. You know, I think it's what I've learned over the couple of years. It's with other projects, you know, if you take something and just, you know, put your time and effort into it, you know, you can make something from nothing. And you know, that's what I try to do with anything I'm going after.
So you have this goal. How did you go about trying to make it a reality? I mean, what strategies were you using to try and set up this date with Richard Branson?
So I launched it January 1st, 2010. I launched beerwithbranson.com. And the big push was social media, primarily Twitter and Facebook. And there was sort of an overarching theme of the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon concept, and that today, with social media and technology and the web, that 6 degrees is probably more like 5 or 4 degrees of separation. So one of the things I first asked myself was, through social media, can I find a connection to Richard Branson that's closer than I realized that I wouldn't know if I hadn't done this campaign? So it was, you know, spread the word as much as I can. I kind of blogged about it a little bit here and there and try to get the attention of the Virgin company and, you know, anybody who was willing to listen.
So it didn't happen right away. A couple of years passed without you meeting. I mean, did you ever have any close encounters during that time period?
So I had some good buzz right from the gate, but nothing extremely promising right away. There are some fun connections. A couple of them to mention were, I met a guy who used to deliver pizza to Richard Branson decades ago, and then I was able to get in touch with a guy who won a Richard Branson lookalike contest. that contest was actually sponsored by Virgin, but I figured, well, if I can't meet Richard Branson, I can go have a guy with a lookalike and, you know, make it look like I had a beer with Richard Branson.
So just not too long ago, you had the opportunity to have your beer with Branson, your wish come true, I guess. How did that meeting come to be? How did you finally make it work?
So it was a long road of patience and persistence, I suppose. After that initial buzz in 2014, I kind of had a job change in my personal life. You know, Beer with Branson kind of got pushed on the back burner. And eventually I kind of thought, instead of making this a year-long goal, let's just kind of put this on the bucket list for life of having a beer with Richard Branson. And several years passed, and all of a sudden I'm in January or February of this year, and I get an email from one of my friends saying that Richard Branson's going to be in Grand Rapids speaking at the Grand Rapids Economic Club. At this point, I'm beyond excited, thinking that he's coming to my home state. This is the best chance to make it happen. And on top of that, having a beer in Michigan has never been more relevant with the entrepreneurship that's blossomed in Michigan in the last few years, and especially the brewing industry. And then him being in Grand Rapids, which is Beer City, USA, I was like, this has to happen here in Michigan. How do I do it? So kind of relaunched the campaign at the beginning of May only, and wanting to have the, you know, maximum peak of buzz just before he got to Michigan. And once again, I got a little bit of buzz online, got a little bit of social media push, but no promising leads. And I reached out to another notorious native of Grand Rapids, Rob Bliss, who's done a number of stunts himself, including the Pure Michigan video and Grand Rapids lip sync video. So I reached out to him, and he was gracious enough to, you know, kind of post it to his Facebook and Twitter, and he got a response on there from one of the reporters in Grand Rapids, who then introduced me to the executive director at the Grand Rapids Economic Club, Lorna Schultz, who eventually put me in touch with Richard Branson's people and kind of played it from there. So if you followed all that, that was kind of the final connection that made it happen, which really, if, you know, these aren't people that know Richard Branson personally, but in the end, it was from me to Rob Bliss to Steve Zagman to Lorna Schultz to Richard Branson. So that's four people. You know, so
4 degrees.
It's I was impressed. So in one instance, I suppose my theory worked out.
So what was it like? I mean, was it what you expected to sit down and have a beer with him?
It was a great moment. I won't lie, it was very brief and very short. A little anticlimactic, but it's okay. You know, kind of knowing the circumstances, there's a big black tie event, and knowing that I had to catch him here in Michigan. But I was sure to have a couple Michigan brews on hand.
What did you drink?
Yeah, I had one from the Upper Peninsula. I wanted to represent home, and the closest brewery to home is the Keweenaw Brewing Company in Houghton. So I had a Keweenaw Widowmaker, and then being in Grand Rapids, I represented Founders as well and had the Founders Dirty Bastard beer. So poured one of each. It was the best beer I've had in a long, long time. It was refreshing in many respects. And, you know, I was able to ask a couple questions. And, you know, the kind of the personality you see of Richard Branson in the media and on TV, you know, it's kind of the same in person, you know, that, you know, kind of eccentric guy and, you know, kind of fun and outgoing.
You said you had the chance to ask him a couple questions. What did you ask him?
I started, you know, kind of explaining the idea of this whole campaign, and, you know, and I was delighted to hear that his staff had heard of beerwithbranson.com in the past, and I don't know at what point that was. So he congratulated me on that, and I kind of asked him, you know, if he could have a beer with anybody, who would it be? The idea being that, okay, maybe next I'll go and try and have a beer with that person. Mm-hmm. However, that idea died pretty quick as, you know, his answer was, I'd like to have a beer with a young entrepreneur like you. So we had a nice little photo opportunity there, and, you know, it'll be a photo that might be on my fireplace mantle for years to come.
So when you're not having beers with billionaires, what other projects are you working on?
So I've done a series of projects now, and, you know, this definitely won't be the last. It's so much of it dates back to my undergrad years at Michigan State and when I kind of got inspired to do some of these things. And the first one after graduating from MSU is I took a year-long road trip across the country. And I guess that was kind of in the spirit of some of Richard Branson's greater adventures of, you know, traversing the earth and whatnot. Not quite as grand, but getting there. And in 2006 and 2007, I stayed with over 100 households of strangers, kind of documenting my journey across America, seeing a cross-section of the country. So that was inspiring, to say the least. I kind of got back to the UP. I was actually inspired by all the T-shirts I collected in almost all 50 states. So being back in the UP, I was like, well, how can I kind of replicate something here? So I started Uber Steve's at that time as a kind of Upper Peninsula apparel brand and blog to kind of put the UP in a good light and whatnot.
You'll have to, okay, what does Steez mean?
So Steez, which is spelled S-T-E-E-Z, is actually a combination of the word style with ease.
Okay.
I think it kind of comes from a lot of the snowboard, skateboard, surf culture. Mm-hmm. But it's actually, Steez isn't actually necessarily related to tees, you know, which I sell a lot of on the website.
So beyond having a beer with your idol, What do you think you've gained from this experience?
You know, I was really excited to see the response from everybody. It was overwhelmingly supportive, and everybody was excited to see it finally happen. And I think people just kind of got this message that here's some guy that took a crazy idea and made it happen. And it took a lot of, you know, it took over 4 years to do. And I think this shows the people that, you know, if you have patience and persistence and, you know, you really put your best foot forward into pursuing something, that you can really make it happen. And that's kind of what I always want to say to kids and college kids these days, is that if you have an idea, go for it. And I think in kind of daily conversation, things come up all the time where we kind of ask ourselves these hypothetical if questions, but we rarely pursue them. And it's impossible to pursue them all, but I want to see more people kind of, you know, pluck one of those ideas they think is the best and to run with it.
So you've accomplished your goal. You had a beer with Richard Branson. Any future plans to have another beer with other idols?
Well, I can't release too many details yet, but I would definitely like to make a series out of Beer with Branson. I might call it something like Things with People.
Okay.
So meaning that it won't necessarily be a beer. You know, it could be a lot of different things. Maybe it'll be line dancing with somebody. Who knows? But it's to be continued, and hopefully many adventures down the road.
Well, Bugsy, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Thanks so much for your time, and congratulations on accomplishing your goal.
Thank you. Have fun out there.
Bugsy Sailor is an MSU alum who successfully completed his mission to have a beer with Richard Branson. He's also the founder of Eupersties and Latter Day.
We have learned more here about the business that will replace the space of the Creole Gallery in Lansing's Old Town, according to Ken Palmer in today's Lansing State Journal. A New Orleans-themed bar and music venue called the Creole is expected to take over the space that was occupied by the former Creole Gallery in Old Town. The new business will offer live music and a limited menu of Cajun-style food 5 nights a week, according to co-owner Sam Short. So there we go. Michigan is also quietly carving out a place in the world of mead. What the heck is mead, you may be asking? Well, mead is an alcoholic beverage brewed from honey. Just like wine, it can be sweet or it can be dry. It can be carbonated or it can be still. And get this, the website ratebeer.com says half of the top 10 meads brewed in the world are being brewed in Michigan. What is going on here? To learn more, Current State welcomes Brad Dalhofer, owner and operator of Bee Nectar Meadery in Ferndale, Michigan. Welcome to Current State, Brad.
Thanks for having me.
Is mead becoming popular enough that you don't find yourself going around constantly explaining to people what the heck it is?
Not quite yet, but it's getting there.
Okay. Tell us about your company, Bee Nectar. When did you open?
We opened in August of 2008. Before that, we were just homebrewers, like a lot of people making beer in their kitchen. We were making beer, started making hard cider, and after a while, started making mead. My wife got laid off and said, hey, maybe we should start selling your stuff.
Extend the product line a little
yeah.
bit. How much product do you produce altogether amongst the beers, the ciders, everything?
Currently, we're packaging about 1,100 cases a week.
Okay. And what's the main part of the meal? What part of the pie is mead at this point?
Mead's about 98% of it.
Oh, my gosh. And you were that late to start producing it?
Late to start producing mead. I guess there were only really a handful, maybe about 60 meaderies in the country at the time we opened. And the reason it's only, like I say, 98 is just we just started launching a new cider line. So otherwise, we were 100% mead up until about 2 months ago.
Okay. How many varieties of mead do you make?
At any given time, we've probably got about 12 different types available, but we've produced dozens.
And you've propped three different brews up on our console here this morning, one of which I'll share with our listeners is entitled Kill All the Golfers. So we'll be sampling one of these here in just a few minutes. I'm sure we've had a lot of listeners who still haven't tried mead. I'm one of them. I'll confess. I'm about to try it here for the first time in just a minute. How do you describe mead when you run into somebody who has never drunk it before?
Well, mead is an entirely new thing. A lot of people are just, you know, who would call it honey beer are kind of missing the mark a little bit. It's not quite a beer. It's not quite a wine. It's really its own thing. And as you said, it doesn't have to be super sweet. It doesn't have to be really dry. It can be, you know, kind of whatever we make it. The key ingredient, obviously, in mead is honey. But it could be honey and a lot of other things. We use a lot of like lemon juice or apple cider, and by blending different flavors and different ingredients, we can create a whole rainbow of flavors.
And bee nectar, from what I understand, is really part of a larger surge in the interest in mead, but especially here in Michigan. What's going on exactly?
I don't know exactly why Michigan has been growing so much in the mead category, but what I do know is that the author of a very popular book within the circles of mead makers called The Complete Mead Maker is written by a guy named Ken Schramm from Troy, Michigan. Also, you've got a lot of breweries who are experimenting with, you know, meads and doing different things with honey in the first place. And Michigan is one of the top honey producers in the country as well. So, you know, it could be a combination of those things. I think it also has to do with the fact that because of the automotive shut, you know, a lot of the layoffs in automotive, you get a lot of creative people, a lot of very intelligent engineer-type minds that are out of work and say, hey, you know, I like to drink this stuff. Maybe we should go out and start making it. So maybe that's a possibility as well.
The beverage has this association with history. And I'm wondering if for that reason it's more popular in Europe than it is in the United States.
Not at all, actually. We just launched Europe. I was in Copenhagen about a month ago, and they were telling us that nobody really drinks mead over there. Maybe once a year as just kind of a novelty type of thing. But, you know, mead just really fell out of favor when lower-priced alcohols, even wine, but mostly beer, came into society, and people just kind of left mead behind. And it's always been thought of as this really syrupy, sweet, alcoholic thing that you really couldn't drink too much of, or it gives you a bad hangover. So it had this kind of negative
reputation,
right? And we've had to overcome a lot of that.
It's apparently gone by nickname. My dad used to take a swig of beer, bless his soul, and he used to say, "Nectar of the gods," after he said it. And I found out, I learned in my reading preparation for this segment, that mead, it has been called Nectar of the Gods.
Right.
And the name of your company is Bead Nectar Meadery.
Right.
Typically, is mead, I mean, I've heard it described as, you know, like a fruit pie or, typically it is perceived as a really sweet drink.
Yeah, typically it is. I mean, I think most people prefer it to be on the sweeter side. When you think of what honey actually is, it's the sweet, sugary sap almost of the flower, right? It's the soul of that flower. So the bee's collecting that nectar, and it's sweet. But if you ferment out all of the sugar, you're left with, you know, sometimes very earthy and vegetal kind of flavors that don't necessarily taste very good by themselves. So that sweetness kind of helps balance those flavors out.
Brad Dalhofer is our guest. Brad is the owner and operator of Bee Nectar Meadery in Ferndale, Michigan, and he schlepped a few bottles of mead up here on his motorcycle today to join us on Current State. We appreciate it. Other brewers and winemakers have, over the years, tried to make mead more mainstream. You seem to be making a go of this. Tell us more about what you're doing differently as far as the beverage itself goes.
Well,
you're just being more creative with this, you think?
I think it's not necessarily more creative. I think one of the things we've done to kind of separate ourselves from the pack is that we've tried to separate our marketing from the way other people used to market mead as this Renaissance fair Viking kind of beverage, trying to connect it with history. And what we're finding is it the mainstream just doesn't really care so much about that. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife and myself, my partners, we're all, you know, we're all kind of punk rock, skateboard, comic books, bad movies, you know. So we would rather embrace that, you know, and like kind of our inner geek, as we call it, you know, and let that shine through. And I think we're connecting with so many more people. That combined with our combination of different flavors that we're doing are mimicking a lot more what's going on in the craft beer world than what, you know, what traditionally people had done with mead, which was just that really sugary, sweet, syrupy, you know, basic honey alcohol.
Are your customers who are buying mead similar to yourself? Similar to the group that you just described?
I think so. Yeah. We don't really try to target other people because we know what we like, and we figure if we laugh at the joke, if we get the, you know, get the label or whatever, well then, you know, hey, I can actually get behind that, you know, and I think it's resonating well. I mean, it's getting out there to more people than we intended.
Well, let's go ahead and open one of these, and okay, Brad's going to recommend that I try Zombie Killer. I've got Slice of Life, Kill All the Golfers, and Zombie Killer. Should you give me a little prelude of what I'm about to experience here in Zombie Killer?
Zombie Killer is was the first in our lower alcohol line of meads, carbonated. It's made with
old guy, lightweight, low alcohol.
Well, when I say low alcohol, traditionally meads were like 14-15% alcohol, like a wine.
Oh,
these are all more around 6. Think of it more like a beer. So this is made with fresh pressed Michigan apple cider, Michigan cherry, and Michigan honey.
Very interesting. Here we go. A swig of Zombie Killer. Oh, it reminds me of cider. It reminds me of English cider, which makes sense, I suppose.
Yeah, right.
I've spent some time in England and have quaffed a few pints of cider in my time. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
I really enjoy that. Are you enjoying this? I mean, this.
Well, you can see the smile on my face. No one else can. But yeah, I mean, this is the greatest job in the world. I mean, I feel like the luckiest person ever. You know, like getting laid off was the best thing that ever happened to me.
What do you make of? I mean, there's been an awful lot of ink on craft beers, on small breweries. The legislature's been all over it, manipulating and changing legislation with regard to brewing and small breweries. What do you make of all of this going on? Not just mead, but the whole picture here in Michigan.
Well, not just in Michigan, but I think around the world, what we're experiencing is a food movement. You know, never before have people taken so many pictures of their plate of food sitting in front of them.
True
right?
enough.
And I think people just open their eyes. I mean, post-World War II, we went into this TV dinner kind of mentality and culture, and I think we've been getting away from that.
Well, we want to thank you very much for joining us here today. Brad Dalhofer is the owner and operator of Bee Nectar Meadery in Ferndale, Michigan. We're going to quaff a little more Zombie Killer in just a minute. That's our show for today. Coming up tomorrow on Current State, we'll speak with Lansing Community College President Brent Knight. Also, Michigan kayaker Doc Fletcher and live music, that and more tomorrow on Current State. Brad, thanks for joining us.
For having me.
I'm Mark Bayshore. You've been listening to Current State on WKAR. Have a great day.